Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode 48 for October 28th, 2009. Welcome
back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games
and culture.
And this week, we are feeling a little bit old because we just realized that the Xbox 360 has been out since 2005.
Wow.
We're in 2009 right now.
Going on 2010.
Yeah, if the Xbox to Xbox 360 rule was still in effect, we'd have the next Xbox by now.
Oh, yeah.
So, in honor of that, we found an article by Luke Plunkett from Kotaku. And his article was called "Where Are All the Next Gen Games?" In which he makes a pretty interesting argument that we haven't seen a lot of games that, for him, constitute a next-gen shift. Instead of something that really changes the gameplay, that differentiates this new console generation from the previous console generation.
Like a big leap forward in innovation.
Yeah, instead we're having incremental things where the graphics are getting better and maybe the sound quality, very aesthetic.
Minimal shifts,
and there's nothing in comparison to the shift that, let's say, N64 to Super Nintendo was.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is that instead of being a truly next-gen, this is just kind of refining a lot of the concepts that have been around since the previous console generation that we've had.
Right. And he's lamenting that fact.
Yeah. In order to flesh that argument out a little bit more, he says that if a game, you know, this is his theoretical construct for delineating between a next-gen game and a previous generation game. If a game can be ported to a console in a previous generation and keep its core gameplay and overall design in place, it's not next gen. And then he cites things like Mario Galaxy, which according to his rubric wouldn't be next gen, Halo 3, BioShock, Metal Gear Solid 4. I don't know. I think it's a pretty interesting argument to make because it's always a big deal when new consoles come out.
Yeah.
And you know, you wake up one morning and all of a sudden it's 2009 and the Xbox 360 has been out for 4 years.
Right.
Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that. And I wonder if one of the reasons why it doesn't feel like that is because we haven't had any of those watershed moments that he's talking about.
You mean those games that really define the next gen,
yeah,
quote unquote.
I mean, the classic example would be the transition from the Super Nintendo era to the N64/PlayStation era. I mean, with Mario 64, we literally played games differently. Three-dimensional, right? We got a whole new dimension of existence to play with.
Uh-huh.
And so with that kind of watershed moment, it's clear that we could do things on the current generation of consoles that we couldn't have done in the previous one. And it seemed like, and you know, his argument is that with the Xbox 360 from the Xbox jump, it's not as apparent as to what kinds of games we could play on the 360 that we couldn't basically have played on the Xbox.
Right.
So, what do you think about his examples? First of all, I like the Wii one a lot. I mean, I think the Wii one is the clear winner here.
I'm gonna go out and say I'm gonna say that I can find ways to argue that none of those are really all that next gen.
Mm.
Like, the Wii example is a good one because it is a new way to control your input.
The, right?
The hardware is physically new, and you need it to make the swing motion react. That being said, his definition is that in terms of game design and mechanics, that it is fundamentally different from previous titles of a similar type.
So really it's the input that's different, not the mechanical or software portion.
Or even the game design, right? There's been golfing games for a very long time. There's been, you know, various Wii Sport-like games for quite a while.
Yeah.
And if anything, the Wii Sport minigames are less robust, and they're more
titles. Like a baseball title versus Wii Baseball.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I understand that it feels next-gen, But I don't even know if it matches his own definition of it.
That's an interesting point. How about Fallout 3? I haven't played it, but I have a hard time imagining constructing that large a world on a PlayStation 2 or an Xbox.
Yeah, I could see that. But if you ask a lot of people who've played the first two Fallouts,
yeah.
It still has that feel.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that Fallout 3 did in terms of character progression, in terms of factions and relationships and dialogue options,
mm-hmm.
and just expansive universe that Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 both did mm-hmm. on their PC.
So Fallout 3 is basically a cosmetic update then.
Yeah, I would argue that, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to underplay how important it is
mm-hmm.
that they have one cohesive universe that is so visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
The same goes for the hardware input devices with mm-hmm. the Wii.
Yeah.
But I just don't necessarily see the difference between the previous
mm-hmm.
iterations.
Well, and also, in a way, the argument that if it can be ported to a console in a previous generation and keep its core gameplay is a very loose and malleable argument. Because if I remember correctly, Dead Rising actually was ported to the Wii.
Yeah. Core gameplay was essentially the same. There was just less of a zombie count.
But then the argument would be then the core gameplay is impacted. Because the gameplay of Dead Rising, to my knowledge, was the fact that you have hundreds of zombies on screen or whatever. And if you're on the Wii and you only have 10 zombies, then you are playing a zombie game, but it is not the same type of gameplay.
Okay, but then how many zombies do you need to be officially, like, a ton of zombies?
What is the golden zombie number?
Like, if you lose track, and I'm sure you lose track with a large number of zombies on the Wii,
yeah.
you know, you still get that same feeling.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, if you're comparing the games side by side, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't played either game, so I'm not really qualified to do
it. But then I feel like you can then take that same argument and expand your definition of what would be a next-gen title. Things mm-hmm. that he specifically says are not.
So, like Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, I would say Mario Galaxy is a next-gen title.
But is that because... I mean, clearly it's not really because of the hardware, right? I mean, you could have... I could see that game existing on a machine that is... Well, I mean, a Wii is basically a Xbox.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and it does, to a certain extent, it does take into consideration the motion control. And I think in very subtle ways that people don't really notice very often, but that they make a big difference. I don't know. I went on and on in my review about Mario Galaxy as to why the motion control was implemented really well, but very subtly as well.
I mean, essentially what Luke is putting down is saying that the term next-gen... title, like a next-gen game,
mm-hmm.
is essentially a game that is just very innovative and happens to coincide with the release of a new system, a new set of specs for a console.
Interesting.
And those specs, that new console, allows that game to exist,
mm-hmm.
right? It makes it possible for the game to live in that new space, and it encourages that type of innovation,
mm-hmm.
right? The reason I would call Mario Galaxy a next-gen console is partly because I think that there's a lot of lessons that Miyamoto learned
mm-hmm.
and the team at Nintendo learned
mm-hmm.
as a result of the implementation of Wii games previously,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Going back to what you said about the console allowing for a novel experience, if not maybe a graphically different experience, the case of Little Big Planet is a good one. Because, and Luke brings this up himself in his article, Little Big Planet has now been ported to the PSP. And as far as I can tell from the videos that I've watched, the gameplay as far as running, jumping, and grabbing is all the same. But the creation side of it is not as robust and possibly non-existent. I have to check into that. But, you know, you lose a lot of texture fidelity and you lose some of the expansiveness. But the argument then is it next-gen because of the implementation of the creative stage thing? Could that stage creator have been possible on the previous platform? And maybe it's just a more subtle way of innovating.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it would not have been possible on previous systems,
mm-hmm.
particularly because of the way we've expanded in online play and mm-hmm. downloading and sharing, that mm-hmm. social networking aspect of the next-gen titles.
Yeah.
It just wasn't something that we had mastered in the PlayStation 2 era.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, very few people ever owned a PlayStation 2 modem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you did, you know, the ability to share and have fast internet connection was not ubiquitous at the mm-hmm. time.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. The argument that, oh, we couldn't have done it on the previous system is always correct just because of the sheer processing power. But, you know, the back end is what differentiates Little Big Planet from those other games. I mean, without, you know, it couldn't have existed in a world where Xbox Live was in its infancy or something like that. But then again, are we just now... Is it a false correlation? I mean, more people have broadband now than had broadband during the PS2 era.
Yeah.
So maybe the only reason why it couldn't exist was because of broadband adoption rates.
Sure, but I guess what I'm saying is broadband adoption rates affect how we design things. Because now it's a feasible option to say we're going to make a large jump in saying what is going to define Little Big Planet is partially going to be the ability to create and share.
And that's how it changes the game. You're playing the game differently because you're sharing.
And the game itself is designed differently because of that, right? Mm-hmm. The narrative around Little Big Planet is that we all share in this beautiful dreamverse. You know, that would not have been the chosen narrative path had there not been an actual ability to share.
Yeah, the narrative dreamverse we know as the internet.
Exactly.
That we share our thoughts.
This is a terrible place.
Well, I think that's really intriguing, actually. Like, what if Little Big Planet had come out, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago or something? Would the narrative have been an introverted dream landscape? This is an individual's dream, kind of like a Psychonauts type thing, you know? Like, you are going interior, you're having an interior adventure rather than branching out and making contact with other people.
Yeah, I think very likely.
I mean, it's very much like a chicken or egg thing, yeah. But it does speak to the kind of culture that we live in, that we are connected virtually to lots of folks.
Well, so, I mean, I want to go back to the Wii thing, too, right? Because I don't want to belittle the hardware changes.
Yeah.
But would you call something like Metroid Prime on the Wii, the port from the...
From the GameCube?
From the GameCube to the Wii, as adding maybe some of that next-gen mentality, because it almost feels more natural to move the Wiimote as your pointer.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I would call the original Metroid Prime a next-gen console.
A next-gen game?
A next-gen game, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's because, I think that's because of graphical fidelity. I'm not sure if it changed. Well, maybe, I guess it did change the way we played it, because you wouldn't have conceived of playing a three-dimensional Metroid.
Exactly.
But you probably...
But you could have conceived of it in an earlier console
You probably could have done it on N64, but you probably couldn't have done it very well. I don't know if the environments were that crazy to be able to...
I guess what I'm saying, it feels like every single next-gen, even if it's something that you could have done previously, just widens your scope with the possibility.
Well,
you know, there's something to say that you have... the world at your fingers. You could create anything. Mm-hmm. So let's take more risks and create crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the argument that Halo 3, BioShock, Batman, Uncharted, Metal Gear Solid 4...
The things that he says are not next-gen games.
Well, and I understand that argument because they are just expansions on a theme.
I guess, but I mean, even Little Big Planet. Even Metal Gear Solid 4 is so expansive. Yeah. It's such a large game, and they do such crazy things in there.
Yeah.
That I cannot imagine them even being able to imagine themselves a game of that scope in a console system that didn't provide those visual graphics and the processing power.
It's a hard line to walk because... that is correct. I mean, the processing power is one thing, but the argument is, does it change the way we actually play the game? Did it actually change the way I played the game to know that it was running at 1080p the whole time and that it was...
But it's not just how you play. I mean, it's not just...
Well, that's the argument. The argument is...
But he also says the game design itself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would you have seen... For example, in the beginning of Metal Gear Solid 4, there's those commercials that you can like change the channel.
Well, see,
and stuff.
I think I draw the line there and call that narrative design. Like the gameplay, like the dynamics are very similar.
Sure, but why would you not include narrative design in the game design definition of a next gen game?
Well, I mean, based on how he constructed the article, like his big examples are something like Mario Kart or F-Zero that had Mode 7 graphics on the SNES or, you know, the huge one, Mario 64, that into 3D.
But I guess then I'm saying that it's problematic to separate the two. For example, he mentions Fallout 3 as a next-gen game. Well, part of the reason is because they had the ability to make wide narrative decisions that made the universe seem more real and more interactive and persistent.
Well, maybe that's how maybe that's what we've stumbled onto as the way that we play games differently. Now we care much more as gamers, or at least the group of gamers that we tend to associate ourselves with, we care much more strongly for an integrated story. That is the way that we play games now. We expect a good story. Yeah. If you are arguing that the narrative is part of the game design, whereas before it wouldn't have been. You would just be talking about mechanics and dynamics. But now the aesthetics are now part of the game. Yeah. So maybe that's the next gen innovation that we have.
I think I could agree with that.
Story.
Well, then what about something with really bad story, like, I don't know, Gears of War or something?
How dare you besmirch Gears of War?
Or is something like Halo, for example.
Uh-huh.
We could go back to the discussion we just had about multiplayer and uh-huh. the sharing of an experience over the internet
yeah.
as a next-gen feature.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 3, ODST, all of these online modes that we're seeing in a lot of games, mm-hmm. Gears of War, you know, Battlefield, those yeah. types of things are more feasible and possible with this current next-gen era.
Yeah.
I mean, even outside of the narrative, those are still, to some extent, next-gen games.
Well, I think that we're reaching a point where we're getting diminishing returns with realism, and that's why folks like Luke are kind of stretching for something else to latch onto as delineating the end of one era and the transition into the next.
I see. And so then, in which case, social gaming and narrative mm-hmm. inclusion is what we are talking about in terms of those secondary next-gen...
Well, we would consider them secondary in the PS2 era, but most likely. Yeah. But now they're very much more of a primary thing because we have gotten to a point where visually we can represent pretty much anything we want. And now the new frontier is kind of looking at how we can then convey meaning through all these visual tricks we've learned.
I see.
And it's less apparent, you know? I mean, it's not shiny. You can't hold it up and say... It's not like holding up Super Mario 64 versus Super Mario World, and even a layperson would know the difference there. But if you held up, you know, Gears of War versus...
GoldenEye?
Well, I mean, if you held up Halo 3 versus... Even versus GoldenEye, I mean, you know, yeah, sure, the textures are better and the graphical effects are better, but it's still basically the same thing as mm-hmm. far as how you're playing it. But... more subtly, you're playing Halo in a much different way because you're online playing multiplayer, you're creating your own stories with the way you interact with other people. It's just not something you can take a screenshot of.
Yeah.
And so often, next gen has been defined by screenshots. Like, oh, look at this thing. Look at how many polys we're pushing in this thing. Look at how many rubber duckies are in this PS2 demo. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just... I think it's not as apparent now. And the other thing that I think is happening, especially with this current generation coinciding with the recession, is that we are seeing the console world start to mimic the PC world in incremental upgrades.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really shocking to me that Natal is going to be a Xbox 360 thing and not part of a new Xbox.
Yeah.
Or the PlayStation Motion Controller is part of the PS3 and not a new PlayStation.
Right.
We are now... into a world of kind of incremental slow upgrades rather than an every 4 or 5 years just plop open a new thing.
Right. So, you know, our entertainment system will slowly grow larger and larger until it engulfs the entire room.
Yeah, kind of like an Akira thing going on.
Sweet.
I was trying to think of some games that fit the definition that Luke was putting out. And I was having a really hard time.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think that we have reached a point where a lot of the stuff that we always dreamed of doing is now possible. Like we were talking about Shadow of the Colossus earlier, before we started, and that was something that I consider like a distinctly PS2 game. Like yeah. you couldn't have done that before, or Grand Theft Auto 3, distinctly PS2. I don't think the PlayStation could have handled that.
Yeah,
even in a scaled down version, you wouldn't have gotten the same experience. The thing that I came up with as far as changing the way gameplay works and how we play games is downloadable content.
Yes, wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, and so things like Pixel Junk Eden, Braid, Fat Princess, not only do they have, you know, some pretty nifty technical tricks if you have things like rewinding an entire stage
right.
or things that have a huge expansive world map like Pixel Junk Eden, they're also changing the way we literally play games. I mean, we download them, we play them for a certain number of minutes rather than hours and hours on end.
We can add new parts to the game itself.
Exactly. New content. The pixel junk that I'm playing right now is not the pixel junk I was playing a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the metagame of Nobi Nobi Boy. Like, that's not something that would have been.
Yeah, and that's something that is unique to this console generation, completely unique. And it changes the way we play because we now think of playing in a social sense. You know, when I'm playing Nobi Nobi Boy, I'm freaking out because it's a horrifically weird game, but I'm also freaking out because there's thousands of other people playing this horrifically weird game.
Or even something like Flower that kind of redefines how we define success and failure. You know, not only is there the motion control aspect of Flower, but there's the fact that this game is designed to make you chill out and relax a little bit.
I actually think Flower is a good example of the traditional generation gap, because really? I really do not think you could have made Flower on a PS2 and Xbox or a GameCube. One, because motion control.
Yeah.
And two, because I really think that to get the full effect of that game, you need to have something as beefy as the PS3 to run it.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. I mean, just the visual, you know, the grass itself and the way it reacts to the wind.
There's nothing that even comes close in the previous generation.
In terms of a technical requirement,
Yeah. And I mean, that's just me to the layperson's eye. Like, I can only evaluate things by comparison because I've never actually had to animate them or code them myself. But there's no possible way I even saw anything remotely similar to the grass in Flower on a GameCube, a PS2, or an Xbox. There's nothing.
I would say it has a kind of next-gen game predecessor, though, in Echo the Dolphin on the Genesis. Seriously, that game was impressive. For back in the day. And then, you know, I'm going to leave it at that.
I'll let Echo speak for himself.
When before have you been able to play as a sea mammal?
Yeah, I guess not. There's
Seaman on the Dreamcast. On the Dreamcast.
There's no sweet radioactive manatee games there that happened in the 90s. Well, interesting. I mean, it's the thing is, and he talked with Todd Howard from Bethesda about this, who echoed a few of the things that we touched on. But you know, it's the visual component. He says it's the one that everyone notices first when you have a generational shift. But things like the way physics are handled, the way difficulty is handled, which I think is interesting because now when you have a wider and wider audience, you need to start thinking about how difficult to make your games. And that's something like we would have never had a scalable... Yeah, exactly. A Prince of Persia thing is something very unique that maybe wasn't necessarily hardware driven, but it was definitely
ideology
next gen. Yeah, almost. Exactly. Ideologically, it was a very current, contemporary game because it was made for a diverse audience of skills. And so I think that's an interesting thing to look at rather than the hardware side. We're starting to look at generations in terms of ideologies.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Yeah. And I think you get those new changing ideologies earlier than you might imagine. Like, I think a lot of developers, you know, you could see it when they talk about games or when they talk about with what they're trying to make in a game. There, you get the sense that there's a lot of really great ideas floating out there that haven't been really implemented. And when you get a next generation console, or when you get a big shift in capabilities, or even a big shift ideologically, it opens the door for those risky moves where developers can apply those ideas to their games. You know.
So, before we wrap up, is there anything? It's really hard to see the future because we don't know exactly what's going to...
Well, I've got a crystal ball right here.
Yeah, well, fire that up because I want to know what you think the next gen... Like, I'm going to start calling it current gen now. I mean, damn, we're like 4 years into this already. I mean, so next gen, what are you looking forward to? What have you run up against in this current generation of consoles that has you excited to either be solved or to be abandoned or just to be advanced upon in the next round that's coming up?
That's tough. I mean, well, I'm going to throw out first a caveat and think, and of course this reflects with past things I've said on the podcast, and as I've talked about the Wii today, it's very obvious. I think that motion control thing, it's a gimmick unless it's applied correctly. And so I don't particularly look forward to Natal until I see a software that really utilizes it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of things that I've bumped up against now,
I think that I was going to say motion control too, just to finish off that topic. I think that motion control to this generation will be to what 3D was to the N64 generation, which is to say that N64 generation introduced the concept of having games primarily in 3D. Most games come out were three-dimensional. It wasn't until the next round of things that we really got good at it. Mario no longer makes the player futz with their own camera. Mm-hmm. Remember, like, yeah. N64, where you had to move your own camera? That just doesn't exist anymore, and probably for the better. I mean, yes. we've perfected it to some extent. Shadow of the Colossus was the perfection of three-dimensional adventuring, whereas something like Zelda on N64 was a really bold and innovative step, but is less elegant than something you would have found on the PS2.
Yeah.
So I think that's what will happen with motion control. I think this is the first rough pass at motion control, and that as we go into the next generation, we'll really get this figured out.
Yeah, and then it's just a step away from that to jacking into the Matrix.
Holodeck.
You know? Holodeck. It's about time. Well, I'd also add, I think we talked about the narrative aspect of modern next-gen systems, and I think that's something that could be improved upon in the future, and mm-hmm. I think will grow.
You mean like let's take an example, maybe the next... You know, the next Xbox or PS3 will see something like a game like Mass Effect, but the world will feel much more alive.
Yeah, and much more reacting to the player. Mm-hmm. You know, we've already seen things like Far Cry 2 and games that kind of deviate from the authorial narrative mm-hmm. control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's going to be... I guess what I'm saying is I think we're seeing a lot of ideological changes right now.
Yeah.
Be it on difficulty, like you mentioned earlier, yeah. about narrative design, in mm-hmm. terms of dialogue, in terms of, you know, the universe existing regardless of the player.
Yeah.
There's a lot of various ideological changes that I think that we're seeing, and it would mm-hmm. be cool to see where that goes over the next, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe years. That will be the implementation generation, or the perfection generation will be the next set yeah. of boxes that are set to come out.
I mean, and then in the long distance, you know, I mean, I could see that being incorporated into motion control and facial recognition, you know.
Yeah.
If you're looking upset, you know, your computer might say, oh, hey, well, you know, what's wrong with you today? Or
well, we'll see what Milo has to say when we meet him.
I'm already pissed off that my Wii Fit board tells me that I'm fat.
It doesn't tell you that you're fat. It just passive-aggressively asks if you've been snacking before bedtime.
Oh, you haven't been here in a while. What have you been doing, George?
Shut up!
Stupid Wii Fit board.
Okay, well, if you folks want to write in with your thoughts or predictions on the previous shifts between console generations, or what you think the future will hold for us, you can do so. Send those emails to experiencepoints@gmail.com.
You can also leave your comments on this podcast as well as any of our posts. We update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings, and the site is experiencepoints.blogspot.com. Also, email us if you run into a story that you'd like us to talk about.
Yeah, we would gladly oblige your request to hear us drone on. All right, until next time, have fun.
Have fun.
In the future.